This is Peter Adkis, and giving a shout out to all of you out there listening to Gamers Haven and also Fistful of Comics. Keep it up. These are.
It's game time.
Quiet, please. I am analyzing.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Is the next step the transplantation of the human brain?
Ballsy. Stupid, but ballsy.
Stand by for action.
Welcome to the party, pal.
Okay.
Remember, we're not dealing with an intelligence on our own level.
Bring in the logic probe!
Ooh!
End of line.
Stand by for action.
Gamers Haven Special Edition.
Welcome to the Gamers Haven and Vorpal Network coverage of Gen Con 2009. Well, not all of us were able to make it to Gen Con this year. The Fistful of Comics guys were gracious enough to actually get there for us. And so here we are presenting you with an interview with Goodman Games, as done by the Fistful of Comics and Games guys. Now, for more Gen Con coverage, you can visit www.fistfulofcomics.com. You can also visit www.thetomeshow.com for more. And now, without further ado, give you the Goodman Games interview from Gen Con 2009.
Get the newest releases at RPG Now. Only at RPG Now can you get the absolute latest and best releases from fantastic publishers like Palladium Books and White Wolf Publishing. There are new products every single day. Come to RPGNow.com and get them the instant they're available.
Hi, I'm Benton from Fistful of Comics and Games. We're at Gen Con 2009, here with Joseph Goodman of Goodman Games. And with me is Darren here.
Darren Kerr, not Kerr.
Kerr, okay.
Hey, Darren, hey, Ben. How's it going?
Not bad, how about you?
Pretty good.
Good.
Yeah.
So, I guess to jump right in with things. You made some comments online that caused a lot of stirs about you thought D&D 4th edition was doing decently and doing well, and other people weren't, I think, or I forget exactly. Sorry.
It's okay. It's been a long morning, huh?
Yeah.
Thursday was rough. Yeah, so I'll just give a quick summary, then you guys ask me questions. But the long version was, or should I say the long, I'll tell you the long version. No, the short version is that over the last probably year and a half or so, there's a lot of people who have been disheartened with 4th edition for one reason or another. And a lot of them are disheartened because they have a particular interest of some kind, you know, which didn't work out for whatever reason. But and that interest could be personal, like you really like 3rd edition, you didn't want to move on, or it could be professional. There are certain companies that had a vested interest in one thing or another. And people are masking the issue of whether it's selling with their own personal interaction with the game. I just want to make the point that everybody's free to love or hate whatever they want, but there's a reason the poor book's been reprinted 4 times and appeared on the New York Times bestseller list and so on and so forth. Excuse me. Essentially, from everything I can tell, it's not selling as good as 3rd. Then again, you know, 2nd edition didn't sell as good as 3rd. 3rd was a historical high mark. But 4th is selling pretty well and seems to be chugging along. And I think it's very different from some of what you might read on some of the, you know, as my friend Steve from Trollword calls it, the interweb.
Yeah. I believe in that post you said something about you found the best gaming store.
Well, so I did I visited a lot of gaming stores. I think I'm up to around 60 so far this year. And it's just incredibly educational being a publisher to see people who are publishers often get very enmeshed in their game and the game design and the mechanics and how it plays at the table and so on. But what is often lost is the rest of the thought process of actually marketing a game, which is you have to package it and present it to customers, and you as the publisher don't control most of that. You control a very small amount of that. A huge chunk of that is in the hands of these retailers and how they choose to display it. So I've had my personal experiences about displays that have worked and not worked because of the way that retailers tend to stock or not stock items. I mean, I did Dungeon Crawl Classics miniatures, and this is fresh in my mind because we're selling off the last of them here at Gen Con at a discount. But when we did it, they were very well received, and gamers loved them, and lots of individual stores loved them. But the way games are set up, the way game stores are set up, is typically the miniatures are shelved on these little pegs, which are not anywhere near the modules. And so what I had asked stores to do was take your modules and take your Dungeon Crawl Classics miniatures and put them near each other, and that's how you sell a lot of them. And there are certain stores, like stores that I would personally visit and sort of, hey, you know, have you thought about doing this? And they would actually sell the miniatures pretty well. But stores that didn't do that, you know, the miniatures are way over there. And the guys who buy the modules, I'm hoping will make the connection to buy the miniatures, never made that connection because the miniatures are 12 feet away on a different shelf. So people underestimate that in a huge way, how much the retailers can impact your sales. So I just try to visit a lot of game stores and see what's going on and talk to them about, you know, how they're presenting my products, you know, spine out, face out, how much the top you can see, et cetera. So in this post,
Well, I was just going to say along those lines, what sort of changes have you made to the Goodman product lines with the switch from 3E to 4E? Now there are some clear sort of cosmetic changes that have been made to the Dungeon Crawl Classics line.
Yeah.
What was the thinking behind that?
That's a good question that ties directly back to retail stores. Here at the show, we're selling a first edition module. So we have a first edition Dungeon Crawl Classics module right next to our fourth edition modules. And everybody who comes up, I explain to them, this one's fourth, this one's first. You know, I'm there and I can tell them that. In a game store, where they have 100 different vendors who supply them, and not every staffer knows about RPGs. There's a miniatures guy and a card guy and the RPG guy usually. They can't explain things to customers. So with the Dungeon Crawl Classics look and feel, if the 4th edition design had been in any way similar to the 3rd edition design, what would have happened is you would have had products on the shelf, some of which were 3rd, some of which were 4th. You couldn't distinguish them visually. Or it might have been subtle, but if it wasn't incredibly obvious, somebody would come into the store and buy the wrong one. They thought they were buying 4th and it's actually 3rd, or vice versa. Chance that there's a guy in the store who really knows gaming or really knows RPGs or likes our products or whatever it might be, who will be there to tell them. But most gaming stores, most decisions made by customers in those stores are not based on staff input. They're based on reading the back of the box and stuff like that. So if you have that similarity, it causes a ton of confusion. So there had to be a different look of some kind, and it had to be different enough that that people could tell the difference. Because the modules are already multicolored, I mean, we went through 52 of them, there wasn't really like a single color I could pick that would say like this is 4th edition, except for white. Mm-hmm. So the core design had to be white. We kept the horizontal design of the cover art, and we eventually added a colored band at the top. But it had to be different to make that distinction in the store.
Yeah. Cool. So with your Dungeon Crawl Classics line, do you have sort of like a path, adventure path, sort of a vague, rough adventure path going with them? Do you have any plans for Upper Paragon, Epic?
Yeah, we actually have a lot of plans for a lot of cool stuff. In 3rd edition, I think we spent probably 5 or maybe 6 years developing that line. And so it's interesting to start over from scratch, you know. So we have, I think, 11 4th edition modules on the DCC line. And the Poonjar series, there's 3 standalone modules which are sort of gradually forming an adventure path. Poonjar box set for Gen Con next year to really expand that. And then once we get 30, 40, maybe 50 more modules, then we'll really blow it out and we'll get complete, you know, into the higher levels, and we'll have the ability to just do complete settings and stuff like that. So it'll evolve and it'll be a lot of fun.
Cool. So what sort of new things do you have out and out published and so, I guess?
I'm gonna grab my bag.
Well, I can just say for sure, one of the things that I know you've got out since I bought it yesterday was the newest issue of Level Up. And what prompted the decision to release a 4E magazine, particularly after WotC's moved to an online model for Dragon and Dungeon? Now we've got Wolfgang Bauer and Open Design with Kobold Quarterly, and they're having some success with that. But what made Goodman want to throw their hat into this periodicals ring?
If you ask that question of any retailer, you get a really fast answer, which is retailers love Dragon and Dungeon because it made their customer come in every month, so every 4 weeks, this guy would come in to pick up the latest issue. And that meant that every 4 weeks their customer would appear and would maybe pick up some dice or buy something else while they're there. Retailers like repeat purchase models. That's why they like the Dungeon Crawl Classic series as well. And so when D&D Insider came along, I mean, there's a lot of folks who like it, but some of the people who weren't so fond of it were retailers who had this vested interest in having people come into their store routinely. So I heard that repeatedly, and that gave me the sense that there's at least one large base, which would be retailers, that would definitely support a 4th edition magazine. And then, you know, like, not to be crass, but a lot of people like to sit around and read a magazine, you know, sitting on the toilet or, you know, sitting in the sofa. Or you go back when it's a nice day and just read on your, you know, your lawn chair or whatever, you know? And there's definitely a retail trend. So I think there's a lot of people there who would find an interest in this respondent. There you go.
Level Up Magazine, what sort of things does it cover exactly? Is it like art design, or power types?
I think it's 4th edition. So there's room in there, excuse me, we have some sort of standard columns that cover new items and new class options, new monsters and so on. We also have some, every issue has something fun. So this one actually we do a thing called Cthulhu Crawl Classics, which is kind of...
I thought that was really cool, actually.
Yeah, like Lovecraftian-inspired monsters and a short adventure, and yeah. It's going to be a chance because it's a forum for short articles, right? So we can just explore fun ideas, you know, and then if people really like them, maybe we expand them later on to something larger, you know. So.
The other thing that, you know, I think is great about Level Up and magazines that you don't get as much of on the internet necessarily is the opportunity for other companies to advertise and to you know, find out about other games that way. Because I remember way back in the old days when I was reading Dragon in the, you know, the early 70s, and not time-wise, but issue-wise, that's, you know, one of the ways that I became interested in other games was seeing these ads in magazines, and so it's cool to be able to see that again.
Yeah, it's actually, I was just talking to another publisher yesterday about how the market's kind of changed. There was an era where the only way you could find out about stuff was to go to your local store, and if store A had it on the shelf, you knew it existed. If they didn't have it on the shelf, unless you went to store B and saw it on the shelf, you had no idea this thing existed. So your advertising was a crucial role for getting that word out. Nowadays, the internet exists, right? So if store A doesn't have it, oftentimes 90% of customers know what's out there, and they go buy it somewhere else. But at the same time, to know what's out there, you have to subscribe to the mailing list or somehow be aware of the existence of this thing in general so that you're even tuned into the fact that it's out there. And advertising still serves that role of it puts something in your face versus you reaching out to find it. And if you're a gamer and it's putting stuff in your face that you're interested in, it's cool, you know? You find out about new stuff. It's really cool.
So, I forget what the title is exactly. Age of Cthulhu?
Age of Cthulhu, yep.
Yay! Yeah. So, is that... What system is that for exactly? Or is
it
that
it uses the official Call of Cthulhu based system. So it's licensed from the official Cthulhu guys from Chaos. And this just came about as a whim. I'd actually talked to the Chaos team about doing some projects like 2-3 years ago, and the thing we were gonna do never really came through. But then this opportunity opened up. And Call of Cthulhu has like a gazillion players out there. You know, it's been around forever. All the editions are kind of the same. Like, they're all more or less compatible. So it never made anything obsolete, not like D&D 1st and 2nd and 3rd edition. And every gamer has played this game. You know, every D&D gamer has played this game. It's like everybody owns dice. Everybody's played Call of Cthulhu. You know, it's just out there. So we had a chance to do it, and we wanted to do something interesting. So we're doing a series that focuses on different locations and how the mythos kind of ties into the mythology of those locations. So the second one is just out now. It's called Madness in London Town. And we actually, the third one's in progress. That one's actually set in Russia and sort of works like the Yeti and sort of these Russian creatures into the whole mythology. And we have plans for other ones in other parts of the world that traditionally haven't been as explored as much within what's been done before. So they're a lot of fun. It's a cool series.
Now, you also have a tradition with the Dungeon Crawl Classics line of releasing con exclusives. So what have you got out Gen Con right now that's exclusive this year?
So we have a couple releases. We have, I'm looking at the three con exclusives. DCC number C9, Tomb of the Blind God. C9 stands for Convention 2009. So we've actually released this one at every con we went to this year. Genghis Con, Dunder Con, D&D Experience, KubaCon, and now Gen Con. It's kind of just the con special we're doing this year. So each con is printed with the logo of that con. So there's, I guess, 5 printings with different logos on them.
Collectors beware.
Yeah. But this one's actually a fourth edition module. But we got Aero Lotus to do an old school cover just because it was cool. So it's fourth edition, but with an Aero Lotus cover. And there's also, for one of the cons, we did a more traditional cover. I forget which one. It's been a blur of cons. Then we have we did DCC number 36, Talons of the Horned King. We released a first edition rules version of that. And the author of this, Mike Ferguson, you know, he plays first edition, and he actually had already done the first edition conversion and emailed me. He was like, hey, you know, I got this thing lying around in this module I did. You know, you think you might want to publish it. And I was like, yeah, cool. So it's a first edition module. Then we have, for 2 years in a row, we've done a seminar called How to Write Adventure Modules That Don't Suck. And it's always well received. We usually have standing room only and tons of conferences. You know, all we do is sit around and talk about our adventures. But it's done well. So we wrote a short pamphlet with the same title, How to Write Adventure Modules That Don't Suck, just to see if there'd be interest in it. And actually, there's been a lot of interest, and so now I'm thinking maybe we should publish this in the game store. It's just sort of a book of adventure design.
Now, are those items only available at the cons, or are they available through the Goodman Games website?
If we have any left over at the end of the show, we'll put them on the website. A couple of them are close to selling out, and it's Friday morning, so we may not have a lot available. But, yeah. It's always hard to tell if things like first edition modules or you know, how to write adventure modules that don't suck. I mean, I don't have any historical data on how this thing's going to sell, but it's doing pretty good, so, yeah.
I know there are a few books in your lineup. There are like a book on tieflings, a book on Eladrin. Are they more available mechanics for those races, or I guess more description for them?
It's more like race and class options. Obviously, primarily race options because they're race books, but there was a stretch in the third edition era where many publishers produced books of options for all sorts of things, classes, races, etc. And there aren't as many publishers around right now. I think there's an opportunity. There's obviously interest in that. You saw it in third edition. And especially some Tiefling and Eladrin. And we also did Dragon Wars a couple months ago. There are new races. There's not a lot of material on them. There's not a lot of options. You know, everybody knows sort of what you can do with a dwarf. Even if you don't have the rules, you did it for the last three editions. So, you know, you can kind of wing it if you need to. But nobody really knows what you can do with a Tiefling. So this is our chance to kind of explore some of the new races.
Cool. What's your favorite new race?
Because the way our particular book was developed was based on the seven deadly sins, and applying that to the tieflings and the different options based on those sort of thematically. So it gives you a lot of cool options that are sort of integrated pretty well, you know, and how they're presented in the book, and gives you sort of a model to play your character with.
Cool.
Yeah.
Your newest DCC, the Warbringer Sun, it goes from level 1 to... three maybe? Or?
This is one of our tournament modules. Okay. So every year at Gen Con we run a tournament. This is actually the sixth year of running this tournament. And the idea is, the idea is to kill as many players as possible. So these are total meat grinder adventures. I mean, they're death traps. The very first one was a 15th level battle against a Devil Lich. And we track the judges based on how many TPKs they get and how many player kills they get. They actually get a little badge driven to say TPK if they manage to kill off entire players. So they just kind of compete at the end of the tournament to see how, you know, who has the most badge ribbons. But it's all rolled out in the open. All the rolls are, we use a giant D20, so, you know, it's strictly by the rules, 100% adherence to the rules, roll everything in public. But what makes these adventures so exciting, and the reason 200 people sign up for the event, is because it's a chance to really test your, you know, your puzzle-solving skills, your tactics, all the things that make D&D fun from sort of a competitive standpoint. It's a chance to test all those. So a lot of people sign up, a lot of people run through the module. We have 40 tables this year of round one, and I forget how many round twos we had, but eventually you end up with three people who actually make it, or three teams, I should say, that actually make it to round three, and then the best of them win, and they get trophies at our booth. Then when we publish the module, we have photos of the winners, we include a table with all the scores for all the teams, and all the teams can come back the next year and see their name in print and find out what their final score was and how they ranked relative to the other scores. And it's actually, so in this one, this is last year's, we had 34 teams compete. 17 of them had positive scores, and the rest of them all had negative scores. Caused by getting killed or setting up traps or things like that. But it's a lot of fun. If you think you're good at playing D&D, this is where you can test your skills. So this one will be on, I think, about 3 weeks, DCC number 63, the Warbringer Sun.
So that's cool. Last year's Gen Con module?
Yeah, and so the one we're actually running this year, it's top secret. The way it works is the judges have to pass a series of tests just to judge for us. So we usually flunk out quite a few. We solicit volunteers, both at Gen Con and online and wherever we might be. Folks come in, we give them a series of tests, some of them make it. I mean, we really screen for people who really know the rules and can deal with the player interaction element as well. And then the people who do the best make it into the judging pool. The best judges make it into the later round judging pool, the more experienced ones who've been here before and so on. So players, by the time they get to the third round, you're dealing with judges who, you know, you're not going to have an opportunity to roll over the judge, you know, and try to beat him on rules knowledge. These are people who really know what they're doing. So people do their best to win it, and then they come back the next year off and pick up the module and see how they did. And, you know, you had that room where you got killed, and now you can read on to find out what the rest of the module was. But nobody actually sees the finished module except for me, Adrian, who's the coordinator, and the round three judges. The entire module is kept a secret up until basically the next year because we don't want anybody, you don't want anything leaking out. You want it to be a level playing field. So the judges who judge round one, they only ever see round one.
Oh, really?
The judges who make it to round two, they're the few who know what round two is. And the handful of people who judge the three teams in round three, they're the only ones who have seen round three.
That's cool.
Yeah, yeah. It is cool. We try to.
I'm not saying how impressive it is for me to think that's cool, but that's cool.
Yeah. And then for Free RPG Day this year, you had a release that's kind of previewing the Amethyst campaign setting.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, Amethyst is a really cool setting that sort of discusses what would happen if you had almost like our modern world with technology invaded by fantasy as you know it, you know, dwarves and elves and dragons and so on. So it's this cool combination of technology and fantasy, and there's a lot of, it's one of the more philosophical settings out there. Like, there's plenty of action and adventure, but there's also just lots of questions around how society deals with these things. So what we did for Free RPG Day was a free adventure set in the Amethyst world called Hearts of Chaos, and we have some here at the show for sale. And Amethyst itself is, it's running a little late, but it looks gorgeous. And one of the reasons, you know, things can run late for different reasons. This is the good reason for something to run late. Because we're taking our time with the layout, we're taking our time with the art, and it's coming together really well. So by the time it's done, it'll be well worth the wait. So, but it's coming along good.
Cool. Do you have any, like, stories of recent gaming experiences you've had or you want to share? Or?
Yeah, so I was just talking about this. So the thing about doing this for a living is it can become like work, you know, which is not necessarily a good thing. So I sort of freshened up my gaming experience recently with a couple things. The first was I was at a family reunion. You know, and even though I publish mostly 4th edition stuff, I play all sorts of stuff. So the last game of D&D I played was actually pseudo 3rd edition. I was playing with my cousins at a family reunion. There were five of them. Two of them are adults who have played. One of them had never played before. Last time he played, I think, was 1st edition. And the other three of these, my cousins are kids, you know. One of them is, I think he's 13. And he's played a little D&D before. He's played 3.5 and 4th edition. He thinks 4th edition sucks. He's like my cousin. He's like, 4th edition sucks. We're only going to play 3rd edition. So then my other cousin had never played before. And he's like maybe 10. And then my other cousin is like 8. Like, you know, he had no idea what was going on. He just rolled the dice when we told him. But it was like the most fun I've ever had playing D&D. Probably because I don't play a lot with kids, you know. And you could like see in their eyes. They were living this adventure. You know, when they were fighting something, it was like right in front of them in real life. They were so engaged in the game. There were no rules disputes, no rules conversations. Probably because most of the players didn't really know the rules. Probably because even my cousin, who did know the rules, he had interpreted the rules in some ways that, you know, for example, when he gave XP, he gave a little more XP than he should be given. You know, he made the rules fun for himself and his players, and we just let a lot of things fly. So it was a lot of just like, give me a D20, get higher than a 16, you know, you're going to charge this creature. And I ran through one of my dungeon crawls, one of the 3rd edition dungeon crawls, and it was just so much fun to play with folks who were totally unencumbered by rules. There's no conversation around technicalities. Like, they didn't even have skills worked out for their characters because they didn't really know how to do skill points. So, you know, I'd be like, do you think your character can jump? And he's like, yeah, I can jump. And I'm like, okay, give me a D20, you know? Like, it's just a lot of fun. And it was probably, just made me start thinking a lot more about playing D&D with kids, making it accessible to kids, and creating both modules and core rulebooks that, you know, are things that like a 10-year-old can actually really get into and really enjoy. So it was cool.
Without opening too huge a can of worms, in as concise a way as possible, what's your opinion on the state of the hobby right now?
Do you mean the RPG hobby? Or the
RPG
broader?
Hobby.
Okay. Let me think this through to be concise.
Okay.
I guess I'll say, I think Pathfinder demonstrates that this hobby has a huge amount of potential. So with many businesses, there's lots of people who are willing to buy something if you give them the right product. And I think Pathfinder demonstrates that what a lot of people may have been given in the last couple of years wasn't necessarily the right product. I mean, Pathfinder's going great. So all the people out there who say RPGs are doomed or whatever they might say, there's always reasons to be pessimistic if you look for reasons. I mean, business has competition. There's always competition from somewhere, whether it's, you know, competition from other countries for the United States or for retail stores, PDFs, and all these other venues. But I'm actually glad that Pathfinder has come along and created this big boom, because it demonstrates that there's still a huge number of people out there who are very willing to invest a lot of money in buying an RPG core rulebook if it's the right product. And there's a lot of people doing that right now. So my answer to those, for whatever reason, the internet is filled with people who are constantly saying RPGs are doomed. And my answer to that is, look at Pathfinder. So that's my opinion.
All right, thank you.
So we have a couple things that little announcements that we announced at Gen Con. Should I talk about these a little bit? Or?
Yeah, oh, sure, sure.
So one of the things we announced is that we're partnering with Ed Greenwood to publish a series of books. They're going to be called Ed Greenwood's Fantastic Worlds. And if you guys, there have been books like this in the past. The basic idea is it's a book of inspiration for Dungeon Masters. So there'll be themes. So the first one is going to be about castles, keeps, fortifications, that sort of thing. There'll be future ones about world building, about how to build a mythology in your game, other things like that. But the idea is that, you know, Ed's obviously a very inspiring fantasy writer. I mean, he just like talking to him, he just comes up with ideas, and you walk away feeling like, oh, I got to put that in my campaign. And so these books will be designed for anybody, you know, whatever system you play, whatever game you play, you can drop them in there and just basically turn your campaign into something more alive and more energetic for your players. So the first one of those is coming out in spring 2010. The other thing we announced is the $1,000 module. So we've done the $2 module many, many times. We priced these special promotional modules for $2. This time what we're doing is we are taking I'm going to call it an object of interest that will be hidden somewhere in the continental United States. And the module will be a fantasy adventure that you could play as a fantasy adventure without ever really doing anything else. But it will also contain clues to the location of this object of interest. The first person to uncover the object of interest and follow the associated instructions will win $1,000. And this kind of comes out of we run these dungeon crawl tournaments. There's a lot of guys who are really into problem solving and puzzle solving, and you know, you can see them thinking their way through these tournaments. And it'll be a chance for that to be an even broader forum where anybody in the U.S. can potentially find this thing and, you know, win the money. So that's coming out in summer 2010. And I think it'll be a lot of fun for a lot of people who will get a chance to really see if their, you know, D&D adventure skills are, you know, really, really as good as they think they are, you know, in real life.
That's cool.
It's like a game within a game within a game.
Kind of like, yeah. Well, so my other Gen Con story is I got stuck in an elevator yesterday. So we were at the Westin, and this is like, you know, gamers who like try to be MacGyver in real life kind of thing, you know. So everybody thinks they can solve problems, but when we got stuck in the elevator, nobody could figure out a way out, you know. We're all like looking around for like the secret panel, because like in Die Hard movies, there's always like the secret panel, or like the ninja comes out of the top or whatever, and apparently the Westin, there's no secret panel in the elevator. So we had to wait an hour and a half for the fire department to come and rescue us, and kind of a miserable, sweaty hour and a half with 12 people in an elevator.
Oh, wow.
So this is definitely going to be one Gen Con that I remember, that's for sure.
Well, thank you for your time, and see you soon at future Gen Cons.
Sounds good. Anything else we should talk about? Or
I don't think so. It sounds good to me.
You covered everything in the email.
Okay, good.
Thanks a lot.
All right, go. Thanks a lot, guys. See you later.
Remember to check out more Vorpal Network Gen Con coverage at www.fistfulofcomics.com and at www.tomeshow.com. Please visit our website at CanadianCrusaders.com to find links to these other shows and links to more Vorpal Network Gen Con coverage.
This concludes the broadcast from World Control.
You've been listening to the Gamers Haven podcast. This has been a Thousand Monkeys production. You can find us on the web at www.canadiancrusaders.com. You can email the show at thousandmonkeysproductions@gmail.com. Visit our website to find our episode archives, our actual play, our main feed, as well as promos, links, and a gallery. You'll also find our RPG Now Pick of the Week, our Amazon Pick of the Week, and you can even go through some of our snippet review episodes. We are also shameless, and if you wish to donate some money to the wonderful Gen Con Fund, or just give money to the show in general, there is also a donate button on our site via PayPal. So visit our website at www.canadiancrusaders.com. The Gamers Haven is part of the Vorpal Network. The Gamers Haven podcast and Thousand Monkeys Productions and CantCon are copyright by Ethan Parker. Gamers Haven is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Sharealike 3.0 United States license, some rights reserved. Some music for the show is provided by Joe Hero Band at joehero.com. Other music is used with permission under license. Just like Bruce Campbell.